Welcome to the Marketing Society podcast. I'm your host for today, Alastair Hall-Jones, Acting Commercial Director at the Society, and I'm delighted to be joined by two inspiring leaders from our Hong Kong hub. Jules Klein, Head of Media Sales and the Trust at the Wall Street Journal Barron's Group for Asia Pacific, and Natalie Trong, CMO for Asia, Middle East and Africa, and a partner at Mercer. To get started, Jules, I'd love to hear a little bit about your current role and background, please.
Of course. Great to be here. Thanks, Alistair. And hi, Natalie. My background, Alistair, has been pretty much squarely in the publishing industry for about the last 12 years. I started out in book publishing, where I worked at Penguin Random House in Melbourne, and then made my move into news publishing, which I just love, and where I began my career also in Melbourne at Fairfax Media, before moving here to Hong Kong, where I am now, and where I've run sales teams across the Asia Pacific region for two publishers, the New York Times and now the Wall Street Journal Barron's Group. I'll hand over to you, Natalie, to share a bit about your background as well.
Thanks for that, Jules. Happy New Year to you, and Happy New Year to you, Alistair, and all of you out there. It's great to be here today. So I'm the CMO for Asia, Middle East and Africa and a partner at Mercer. I work with a team of about 35 marketers to look after about 18 countries across the region. I started my career working in travel, actually, and quickly realized it wasn't as glamorous as I thought it would be. I then moved into an operational role and realized I needed something to satisfy the creative side of me as well. So I'm forever grateful that I found my calling in marketing. So yeah, worked right across professional services, telecommunications, banking, fin services, and now in management consulting. Thanks, Alistair. Thanks, Jules.
Amazing. Thanks, Natalie. Natalie and I, as Alistair mentioned, hope to, on this podcast today, share some crystal ball gazing and predictions for themes and trends that we think will be top of mind for leaders and teams within the media and marketing space as we head into a new year, 2022. Natalie, as we both know, over the past 2 years, marketers and publishers have had to navigate some pretty incredible upheaval, and for marketers, chiefly around delivering experiences and messaging through different and new customer and consumer journeys, but also from the perspective of working within and leading remote teams. So when I think about the trends and what's top of mind, I think this word, hybrid continues to be at the forefront, both from a brand experience and customer journey perspective, but also from, of course, how we're interacting with leading and managing teams. So for you, Natalie, you've talked a lot about in the past about the opportunities and challenges born from leading remote teams through digital transformations. And you've also talked about, despite the changes in customer journeys that you've had to navigate, that last year, in fact, was an incredibly successful year for Mercer. What do you predict from a workplace and marketing perspective for 2022? Have you learned something from the stop-start approach to the return to the office that we had in 2021, which will make 2022 look a bit different? And secondly, will your delivery channels for marketing and experiences stay largely the same as in 2021?
Ah, wow. What a big question to start there, Jules. look, what a year it's been already. And, we're only 12 days in. And just this morning, I read a headline, does it feel like January 2020 again, which was a little bit depressing, actually. Before I answer the question, I wanted to say, look, I'm super excited about 2022. But if I'm going to be honest, I'm actually a little scared going into 2022. As you said, so many businesses and so many of my friends that are in businesses said that 2021 was a record year for many of them. And I was fortunate enough to be working at Mercer. We had one of our best years in history. Personally, for me, it was an incredibly rewarding year, taking on new markets, bringing together disparate marketers to create, a powerhouse team. And we led on so many initiatives to help us exceed our marketing revenue targets. We went from 9 million in 2020 for our marketing generated revenue targets, and we hit that, to 13 million we did in 2021. So as a CMO, I'm sitting here wondering what next. It was such a downer coming out of 2020 And we had so much hope for 2021. We threw everything at it. We threw, you know, new ideas, new approaches, new campaigns. So I guess as I've reflected on 2022, I'm a little scared of failure, of not being able to do, you know, do better than we did in 2021, scared of running out of ideas of how we do better, you know, and differently to beat the incredible year we just had. So if I think about hybrid, I'll start with the marketing strategies piece and then we can move into teams and structures. But I think for marketing, perhaps more than any other business function is and will continue to be challenged by successive waves of disruption. I mean, just in the last few years, if you put aside COVID, we've had AI, AR, VR, and now people are talking about the metaverse and Web 3.0. I mean, I'm sure there's marketers sitting out there going, I haven't even conquered 2.0. Now I've got to figure out what 3.0 is. You know, so I think for me, from a marketing perspective, there's probably three fundamental developments in 2022 that I think CMOs and marketers should be thinking about. I think storytelling, you know, we've talked about this a lot, but I think storytelling marketing will certainly take over from traditional product-based marketing models. I think if you've learned nothing from 2021 and you've continued with this product push of product-based, you know, pushing products rather than thinking about solutions and thinking about how to tell the story of what you can do to help customers, I think you're not going to be as successful in 2022. I think the second thing is there's going to be enormous opportunities around the subscription economy, you know, whether that's cloud software or development or simply the process of, you know, just getting picked up and dropped off. We're all living in some form of subscription economy right now. And I think this is only going to accelerate post-COVID. Certainly from a Mercer perspective, we're looking at these types of business models for 2022. I think more and more people would rather just buy outcomes and pay for only what they want to use rather than buy products outright. And I think that's going to be a big part of marketing strategy for 2022. And I think the final thing, as I think about marketing strategies in this new hybrid world, will be, you know, coming in and out of COVID and being in lockdowns and not lockdown, I think consumers will step more and more into VR and overt, you know, augmented reality. We, because of the 18 markets or countries that I was looking after, we had to launch an employee campaign this year. And obviously some countries were in lockdown, other countries were out of lockdown. So we couldn't really bring people together as such. So using AR, we launched an internal campaign and it was one of our most successful employee engagement campaigns. And it was purely because we understood our audience. You know, the average age of our audience is between 27 and 35 years old. So, you know, understanding your audience and making sure that you can go to where they are and use the tools that they want is something that I think will be critical for businesses in 2022. And I guess a company that I feel that's doing that really well is Sephora. And I'm way old at this, but I discovered this Sephora, you know, app, the virtual artist app, and I love it. You know, it allows you to try on hundreds of different makeup products without leaving your couch. And then you can literally just buy them. You know, sometimes you go into the Sephora store and you're so overwhelmed by all this makeup. Whereas, you know, this app, this virtual artist app just allows you to take a photo of yourself and you can put new lipstick on, try 15 different colored lipsticks, and you can just buy them without, you know, having to wipe off and things like that. So I think more and more that's going to be the norm in 2022. In terms of teams and structures, I think the defining challenge for many marketing organizations post-COVID is not about how marketing departments should be structured, but I think it's more about how the marketing function is woven throughout the business, to be honest. You know, how should marketing be working with product and sales to develop a single customer view? I mean, how should marketing be working with customer service to drive customer retention and loyalty? So I think about it in that way. In terms of flexibility and being agile, for us at Mercer, we've always had flexibility. I've hired people I've never met in the last 2 years. I've worked with a ton of people, but the only way I know them is through Zoom, and we'll continue to have that because I don't think we'll ever demand for colleagues to go back into the office, given how unpredictable things are with COVID. So there are my thoughts, Jules.
Yeah, amazing. I love hearing your thoughts around VR and AR, these technologies that we've heard about for so long, and then finally seeing them come into the mainstream and have like proper, I guess, and really kind of just logical, practical use cases is exciting. And as you say, if we can see these really interesting technologies, and you mentioned a few of them at the beginning of our conversation, the metaverse and NFTs and blockchain and all the things that we're hearing about, when these technologies sort of finally come into sort of day-to-day use and make sense in terms of how they're being used, it's an exciting thing for media companies and marketers, and of course consumers who get to have these great experiences. Certainly for the Wall Street Journal Barron's Group, 2021 and 2022 in many ways can feel the same, but I also think in many ways they're so different for my team and also for the customers that we're serving. And what comes to mind when I think of those differences is that at the beginning of 2021, we had just pivoted our business to being able to provide virtual events for customers and also for advertisers. And it felt like the whole year was really how do we really build beautiful and meaningful virtual experiences. And so starting 2021, it was like, okay, we've done this now. We've done it for a good sort of 9 months. Is it going to be sustainable? Do consumers and customers want to come back and have those experiences? And what we saw was they did. This was a new veritable platform. But then we finally had our first experiences of like really genuinely hybrid event moments at the end of last year in December. And so finally seeing kind of the off platform and the online platform for our events business converge was super exciting. When you talk about team structures, Natalie, I totally understand where you're coming from, because your team, like mine, is regionally dispersed across Asia. And in many ways, we've been working in this virtual online way in working within teams and managing teams. And so I feel like the last few years have just accelerated how we do that, how we create efficiencies, how we streamline processes, but also answering the question, how do we create connection and engagement among our team when, as you say, we haven't met some of them for the whole time that they've been in our team, sort of face-to-face. So that's what I'm really excited about as we go into 2022, is thinking more about that culture of teams and genuinely sort of building connection and engagement that feels really tangible and real, even though it technically, isn't in person.
Yeah, and I think, the whole hybrid events, I don't think it's going to be one or the other, Jules. I think it's going to have to continue in 2022 to be, we just need to give customers the choice. Whether it's convenient for us or not, it doesn't matter. It's giving customer the choice. That's why, I talk about the subscription economy. Don't make me buy a $5,000 report if I actually only need $1,000 worth of that report. Give me the opportunity to just buy $1,000 worth of that report. So I think choice is going to be what it is. We can't dictate it, I think, in 2022 anymore. So
absolutely. Yeah. I think it goes to what you mentioned as well around going to where our customers and consumers are. And it also touches on something that you and I discussed yesterday, Natalie, about being customer obsessed, about being customer centric. And I think that we hear these words a lot, being in the marketing space, about, thinking completely of where our customers are and what their needs are. But you're never wrong to bring yourself back to that every single day when thinking of marketing challenges or business challenges. And I think that obsession with sort of, as you say, the choices that customers and consumers and audiences, readers want to have is going to be an answer to a lot of interesting opportunities and challenges as we come into this year.
Yeah, sounds good.
So, Natalie, another theme that we've thought about as we look into our crystal ball, and that we'd be remiss not to mention on this podcast today, is around cookies and privacy. I think we can't sort of come into 2022 without mentioning it, because obviously it's been on the minds of marketing leaders like yourself for some time now, pre-pandemic. And then actually this month, we were meant to be kind of living in this new cookie-less world, but Google has given us a little bit more time to get our shops in order. So we have, I think, till 2023 to continue with this process. Natalie, you have some really interesting ideas around the disappearance of cookies from, or third-party cookies to be precise, from the ecosystem, and how you're thinking about this as a marketing leader in terms of its implications on your team and business and campaigns. I'd love to hear more on what your thoughts are.
Yeah, look, I'm really happy to share my thoughts. I'm probably not going to be very popular, but I feel like this cookie-less world discussion is a hangover that doesn't seem to go away. It's a hangover from 2020, then it's now a hangover from 2021. I feel like this topic's a little bit overrated. Look, and like I said earlier, I'm a little older. So for those old enough to remember the Y2K moment, I feel like this move to a cookie-less world in 2022 or 2023, whenever it is, a little like this Y2K moment. And you know, I perhaps I'm a little naive because it doesn't have a major impact on my world, because we don't buy as much, you know, programmatic and digital advertising as other brands might. But if we just take a step back just for one moment, I guess I want to make two points about this cookie-less world. Privacy laws, regulations around the world have been evolving so much in the last few years. You know, we've had GDPR just a few years ago, and last year we had China, you know, one of the world's largest economies, tightening their privacy laws. And given you and I, Jules, work in this region, you know, it's a huge part of how we need to think about how we do marketing in China and greater China. So as I think about that, we just need to keep constantly changing, you know, evolving and learning about. And I mentioned earlier, marketing just needs to get comfortable riding these successive waves of disruption. So we for me, I guess I just feel as though we shouldn't make such a big deal of it. And the reason I say that comes my second point. I don't know why people are so worried about this third-party data, because most companies that I know don't even manage their first-party data properly to create the customer experiences. And yet we're all like in a tiz about this third-party cookie-less world. Those are my thoughts, and probably unpopular, but that's where I think about cookie-less worlds.
I think that what you mentioned around the constant state of flux and change that people in the marketing and also, of course, the media industry have to navigate is so true. And as you say, this is another wave of change that we're going to ride. And we know from all the changes that we've dealt with in the past that we will, and everything will be okay. I think from a publisher perspective, I think we're grateful for the extra time that we will have to just, as you shared, Natalie, to get our shops in order from a first-party data perspective. For publishers, we're not alone in doing things like continuing to assess universal ID providers and understanding what Google's doing in the space of their Flock solution. But for us, as you say, it all comes down to looking at the first part of data that we have that will be valuable for marketers to utilize to reach audiences in the most compelling way, so that they can reach their marketing and business objectives. So we are grateful for the extra time, but as you say, it is all about that focus on our infrastructure and sort of how to make the most of the basics, the fundamentals around use of first party data. What we have seen is already a resurgence of contextual targeting. This kind of what's old is now new is certainly a theme that maybe we could have chatted for longer about in this sort of trend prediction podcast, like newsletters being incredibly popular again, podcasts, and now contextual targeting, which is sort of previously how marketers used to plan their marketing campaigns. So at the Wall Street Journal Barron's Group, we're really seeing already a resurgence of this, and we're developing proprietary ad products around this need and this opportunity. So even though the deprecation of third-party cookies from the ecosystem is yet to happen, the apocalypse is yet to be here, we're already seeing these changes, which is exciting and interesting.
Yeah, super exciting. And but I think, like you said, let's just get on with it rather than, you know, fearing the unknown and fearing stuff. I mean, let's just get our house in order first. Mark Ritson's famous for saying this. You know, he's always saying, go back to the basics. You know, marketing is about strategy and seamless and flawless execution. So let's go back to doing that and looking at our own shop first.
Absolutely. Wise words. The third theme that I'm really excited to talk to you about today, Natalie, I'd love to hear your views on it, is around creating purposeful brands or maintaining purposeful brands or redefining what purposeful means in marketing today. We've seen through the pandemic that some structural inequalities have been highlighted and even intensified by the last 2 years. And along with that, the pandemic has also put a magnifying glass on sustainability issues that exist across the world. And these are also now top of people's minds. And what we've been seeing, not just through the last 2 years, but certainly before the pandemic, is that people really do expect more of brands. They expect them to be leading the way in terms of helping them to make sustainability conscious decisions, and also to be taking a really genuine and nuanced approach to diversity, equity, and inclusion in terms of how they build products and experiences. I'd love to hear your thoughts in this area, Natalie, in terms of what does purposeful mean for you? Is it something that is a lens through which you think about for Mercer, and how does it sort of relate to how you build experiences for consumers and customers?
Thanks, Jules. It seems everyone, not just marketers, CEOs, boardrooms, we're all talking about this topic, and I'm not sure anyone actually has the answer to the big question you've just asked. I mean, I've been thinking about this topic a lot recently for two reasons. One, because, you know, at Mercer, I'm going to say we haven't got it right yet. We're working through and trying to think through how best that we should be thinking about DE&I and ESG and brand purpose, you know. And then secondly, because of the experiences I've had with brands during the holiday period, I've been thinking a lot about, you know, marketing's role and what we should be doing. So before I dig into the topic, I want to make one point. As a CMO, our job is to develop teams who can drive growth for the business. Yeah, that's fundamentally, first and foremost, what we need to do. You know, the brand stuff is really exciting and fun, but we help to grow the business when we deliver on great customer experiences and we deliver on our brand promise. This is what keeps customers coming back and helps us to create fans of our brand and the products and services that we sell. The issue I have at the moment with all this talk about brand purpose is that I think there are marketers who are trying to purpose wash. Borrowing that from the greenwash, but I think they're purpose washing their brands. And I think they're doing this at the expense of delivering on customer experience or the brand promise. And therefore, I think they're damaging their brands rather than actually helping to grow their business. So I want to share a story with you. One of the airlines I've been dealing with over the holiday period, and I know the industry is doing it tough. You know, their brand purpose is to move people forward in life, and their vision is to become one of the world's greatest service brands. And they're spending a lot of money promoting this, you know, promoting their brand purpose and their vision. However, you know, the poor brand and customer experience I've had with this airline over the last few weeks has resulted in me telling virtually everyone in my network about these experiences, and I'll probably never fly the airline again if I can help it. You know, so I understand it's critical for a brand to have a strong purpose and to be clear on where they stand for DE&I. And as I said, you know, along with many other marketers, I love brand work and I think it's fun. But I think the focus should be less on what you stand for if you're not delivering on the customer experiences and the brand promise, and more on how you stand for that matters more. I think the how part is, you know, are you delivering the customer experiences that you're saying that you should? You mentioned earlier, brand purpose is about delivering so that you can help grow your business, so that you can contribute more to society and communities. But if you're not delivering on customer experience and your brand promise, then I just think, you know, your brand purpose, it doesn't matter what it is, it'll actually break the success of your brand. There will be, no one will care if you're not delivering on your brand, on your customer experience or your brand promise. So yeah, that's how I think about brand purpose at the moment. And I do get annoyed with people, you know, marketers spending so much when they're not doing the fundamentals right. They're not delivering beautiful creative strategies, delivering on exceptional customer experiences.
If I hear what you're feeling around this correctly, Natalie, is that all that work around brand purpose is for naught if you can't deliver on the fundamentals of kind of the reason that your product or your brand exists, which are, in the case of the airline, to help people get from here to there. And so if I understand correctly, it's these things are important for marketers to be thinking of and to genuinely be taking a nuanced approach to thinking about diversity, equity, inclusion, both from a brand and inward-looking perspective as well. But we have to get the basics right of delivering on a product and a brand promise before all of that work can be enjoyed most by consumers.
Yeah, and then, you know, when you then come out and say to me, here's our brand purpose, then I can actually believe in that brand purpose. You know, if your brand purpose is to help me move forward, you know, using the airline example, move forward, then fantastic. You really are. That's the experience that I'm having. And so I can talk about it more, you know, with my networks and become a huge fan for your brand. Otherwise, I just feel like, you know, we jump on this, as marketers, we jump on this bandwagon of, okay, you know, everyone's talking about brand purpose, let's start talking about it. But really all you're doing is purpose washing, because you're not delivering on your fundamentals. As a marketer, you need to help drive growth in the business. And if you're not delivering customer experiences, then you're not driving the growth that you need.
Absolutely. I think the other theme that we've seen a lot over the last 24 months is that there's an expectation from consumers, customers, that how a brand reflects itself externally needs to be consistent with how the business is organized and operated internally. And I think that we've seen that a lot over these past 2 years from employees who care that their products and services, you know, have a purpose and maybe are serving a really positive role in the world. But also all of that is for naught if those employees don't feel respected, don't feel like they have a safe and happy place to go to work. And we're seeing a lot of employee activism happening around the world, people wanting more from their employers. So I think that need to have continuity internally and externally is also something that's been demanded by both employees and consumers of brands.
I agree.
Yeah, thank you very much, Natalie and Jules. That was brilliant and really interesting. I've loved hearing your thoughts and key trends for the year ahead around purpose and hybrid working, both in terms of internally with employees, but also externally as well. And thoughts on the cookie-less hangover that hopefully we will come to an end in 2023. But marketers always find a way to make things happen. And hopefully the hangover isn't too long. But thank you very much for joining us both today. Really lovely chatting with you. And hopefully everyone can carry the conversation on online and share thoughts after this podcast.